Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Teen confesses to shooting. A witness to Friday night's fatal shooting of a 15-year-old Odessa boy told authorities the incident stemmed from an attempted robbery. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, a 17-year-old boy told detectives he picked up Brian Sanchez, 17, and another friend Friday night around 5:30 p.m., and they went to the home of Omar Matthew Gutierrez in the 10,000th block of Silo Alto around 8:45 p.m. When they got to the house, the teenager said Sanchez stayed in the car, but his other friend got out. At that time, the teenager said Gutierrez, 17, and a fifth teenager began walking toward the vehicle, according to the report. The teenager told detectives Gutierrez wanted all of his items and stuck a pistol in the window and pointed it at him, the report stated. He said he started to give him his watch, but then drove away. Sanchez, who was sitting in the passenger seat, was struck by three bullets after Gutierrez opened fire, the teenager told authorities. The teenager and Sanchez were found in a Ford Escape in the parking lot of a fast food restaurant in the 1700 block of West County Road around 9:15 p.m. Sanchez died after being taken to Medical Center Hospital by emergency personnel. According to the report, Gutierrez came into the sheriff's office and confessed to shooting Sanchez. Gutierrez was arrested on suspicion of capital murder during the commission of a robbery and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remains in the Ector County Detention Center on surety bonds of $600,000. Due to the wrong date of birth being provided by the ECSO, the Odessa American erroneously reported Tuesday Sanchez was 17. In another local news roundup, an argument ends in arrest. An evening of drinks between friends ended in an argument and the arrest of one of them on a felony charge Friday night. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 56-year-old Odessa man said he went down the block to an old friend's house on South Broughton Avenue to hang out and have drinks, and they began to argue. During the argument, his friend Moses Porras, 55, went inside, got a rifle, came outside and pointed it at him, the man told officers. He told Porras he was going to call police and went back home. Porras told officers they did argue, but it was only verbal, according to the report. After officers found the rifle, the man admitted he did grab the gun and bring it outside, but insisted it was unloaded and kept pointed at the ground. Porras was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He remained in the Ector County Jail Tuesday on a $25,000 surety bond. Man accused of assaulting two nurses. An Odessa man landed in the Ector County Jail Saturday night after two Odessa Regional Medical Center nurses accused him of assaulting them. According to an Odessa Police Department report, the nurses, a 47-year-old man and a 25-year-old woman, said Jesse James Bermejo, 21, pushed the younger nurse away when she was trying to help him and then intentionally stepped on her foot to get away from her. The nurses said when the older nurse went to help her, Bermejo shoved him into a door and then punched him in the head, the report stated. Bermejo was arrested on suspicion of two counts of assault on a public servant, a third-degree felony punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. He remained in the jail Tuesday on surety bonds totaling $30,000. Crane man dies in wreck. A 27-year-old crane man was killed in a two-vehicle crash Monday less than 2 miles east of Odessa. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Perry Whitley Edwards was traveling east on Interstate Highway 20 in a Toyota Corolla when he failed to control his speed and rear-ended a Mack Granite truck being driven by a 37-year-old man from Midland. Edwards was pronounced dead at the scene of the accident, which happened around 6:40 p.m., The other driver was uninjured. Surprising stats about home burglaries. More than 1 million burglaries take place in the United States each year. That source is from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. More than 137,000 burglaries occurred in Canada in 2020. That statistic is from homes without a home security system are 300% more likely to be burglarized than homes with such a system. The National Council for Home Safety and Security. Residential burglar alarm systems have been linked to a steady decrease in burglaries. Researchers at Rutgers University examined burglaries in Newark over a five-year period, ultimately concluding that an increase in registered home burglar alarms coincided with a decrease in burglaries. Rutgers University School of Criminal Justice. Burglaries are more likely to occur during the day than at night. Break-ins are 6% more likely to occur between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. while people are outside of their homes. Forceful entry is required in 95% of all home invasions. Forceful entry could involve breaking a window, picking a lock, or kicking in a door. Burglars may use pry bars, pliers, screwdrivers, or small hammers to gain entry into a home. Desperation motivates 85% of the individuals who break into homes. That underscores how dangerous interactions with burglars can be for residents of the homes that have been broken into. Someone is home during roughly 28% of all burglaries, and 26% of those individuals are harmed. That is from the U.S. Department of Justice. 83% of burglars admitted they look to see if a home has an alarm before they decide to burglarize it. 60% of burglars admitted they would change their minds about burglarizing a property if they became aware a home has a security camera.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, January 9th. Primary health provider relationship important. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. During this time of year, I say so often to people, have a safe, happy, and healthy new year. The older I get, the more I think I should add to that. To have a healthy year, you need to pay attention to your health, and that means seeing a primary care provider regularly. Human beings are wonderfully and magnificently made. We have physiological backup system upon backup system that let us adapt and keep us functioning on levels that few other creatures can duplicate. Paleontologists talk about that in our history as hunter-gatherers. We are pursuit predators. We don't have the fur, teeth, and claws that so many other creatures have in assisting with survival, yet we have been very able to not just survive, but thrive, because we just keep going when other creatures cannot. That is largely because of our many backup systems. After many years in healthcare, I firmly believe that if you give a person enough time, the human body can adapt to almost anything. So many times in my career, I have seen people in very critical condition while their stunned family keeps saying they have never been sick a day in their life. The reality is, with many of those people, is not that they are truly healthy, but they have been functioning on their backup systems and didn't know it. Unfortunately, when people are running on backups constantly, it just takes one little extra stressor and it pushes them over the edge into illness. That is because when they have been running purely on the backups, they don't have enough time to adapt to that extra stressor and very few extra resources to dedicate to healing. That means they very quickly become very, very ill. This brings me to the downside of being wonderfully and magnificently made. Unless you see a physician regularly and get things done like preventative care and routine lab work, you will never know you are functioning on backup systems until they run out. I cannot stress enough how important it is to have a relationship with a primary healthcare provider and to see them for routine checkups, not just when you were sick, because that is when the doctors can find and treat those underlying conditions like high blood pressure, pre-diabetes, and early organ failure before you start running deep into the backup systems. Let me give you an example of what I mean by this. The acid-base balance in our blood has a tiny range for where our systems can operate versus where our blood becomes so acidic or so basic that we cannot survive. There are two main systems that control that acid-base balance. Acid is controlled by the amount of carbon dioxide in our blood. How fast we get rid of the carbon dioxide in our blood depends on our breathing. The faster and deeper we breathe, the more carbon dioxide we can get rid of. Base is controlled by bicarbonate, which is made by our kidneys. Carbon dioxide we can change quickly, but bicarbonate takes time to change. Let's say you have lung damage from smoking. That is going to affect your ability to get rid of carbon dioxide, which, if you don't adapt, will make your blood more acidic and eventually will become so acidic you cannot survive. There are two ways you can adapt. You can breathe faster and deeper, but if your lungs are damaged, that doesn't really help. The other way is that your kidneys go into high production for bicarbonate. That takes time, but so does most lung damage from smoking. So, you adapt. We call that compensation in healthcare, and never know there is a problem. But then something happens where the lungs suffer more damage quickly and can't get rid of the carbon dioxide at their previous levels, like with pneumonia, or there is something that happens to the kidneys where they can't make bicarbonate at high levels, like with some forms of renal failure. Then you will get very sick very quickly.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 7, 2023. Few points. Ensuring domestic energy remains a vital tool. Ben Shepherd, Permian Basin Petroleum Association. As lawmakers return to Austin, Santa Fe, and Washington, D.C., you can rest assured knowing that the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, as well as its members, are settling in for some tough fights to ensure the safe and responsible development of our natural resources across the Permian Basin. In Santa Fe, New Mexico, lawmakers will gather from January 17 until March 18 for the first session of the 56th legislature. New Mexico has greatly benefited from the economic impact of oil and gas in its ability to make generational investments in areas like health, education, transportation, and so much more. The Legislative Finance Committee has reported that oil and gas activity was responsible for a 42.7% increase in the budget and $3.6 billion in new revenue. We look forward to continuing our work with New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, Senate and House leaders, as well as the minority leaders in both chambers, to craft sound public policy that understands that environmental stewardship and energy production are not mutually exclusive. In both states, our members have taken great strides in reducing emissions profiles, recycling water more than ever before, and developing technology that continues to improve their economic and environmental performance. On the federal side, we await as lawmakers begin the work of the 118th Congress. We will work with both chambers of the divided government, and like many of you, we'll learn how they continue to demonstrate their priorities. However, given that gridlock, we are clearly more engaged with the administrative state. Agencies under direction of President Biden have for months now continued their rulemaking onslaught to target the oil and gas industry. These agencies and actions include the recent listing of the lesser prairie chicken by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the ongoing rulemaking on methane by the EPA, the efforts by the SEC to determine a social cost of carbon, as well as other investment notices regarding environmental efforts, and perhaps most prominently, the effort by the EPA to establish portions of the Permian Basin in both states as in non-attainment for ozone. In Texas, PBPA continues to work with the elected officials across the Permian Basin, including Representatives Tom Craddock, Brooks Landgraf, Drew Darby, Ken King, Andrew Murr, and House Speaker Dade Phelan, as well as many others in the Texas House who recognize the vital importance of the Permian Basin. In the Senate, under the leadership of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, Senator-elect Kevin Sparks, as well as many others, we also expect continued support for the needs of communities all across our region. PBPA members greatly appreciate the sacrifice and contribution of these citizen legislators and are thankful for their continued support of the women and men across the Permian Basin who have gone to work during some of the most difficult times to ensure that energy needs are met with the abundant, affordable, and reliable energy that exists in the Permian Basin. Now more than ever, domestic energy remains a vital tool for our own electric energy needs, our American energy security, and for our ability to assist our allies abroad as well. We look forward to working with lawmakers across the country to ensure that our region can lead the efforts in preserving, protecting, and defending our energy dominance and American sovereignty. City earns high marks for water crisis response. Stuart DeRean, editor. Kudos to city officials for their communication during the boil water notice saga of 2023. The fact is, on Friday morning, there wasn't a lot of questions about what to do, what happened, or what's next, because the City of Midland did the best it could to engage the people in the community who wanted good information. From a very worthwhile Q&A to two press conferences on Thursday alone, three more were expected on Friday, it was the city operating like it should during an event where life took an unexpected turn. Kudos to the Public Information Office, the mayor, the utilities director, Carl Crago, and the city manager's office. This type of incident shows the impact of why a community needs the best infrastructure possible. Let's be clear, by all indications, the boil water notice was caused by human error, but it should serve as a reminder that city government, at its core, isn't about what we want, but what we need. Our resources should be focused on that, and infrastructure joins police, fire, water, sewer, and garbage collection at the top of the list. I thought one of the underreported stories of the week was the call for prayer for Buffalo Bills football player Damar Hamlin. The calls were far too numerous to count, and one ESPN analyst, Dan Orlovsky, leading a prayer in the midst of programming. God, we come to you in these moments because we don't understand, that are hard, because we believe that you're God and coming to you and praying to you has impact. We're sad, we're angry, and we want answers. But some things are unanswerable. Orlovsky prayed, as reported by www.christianheadlines.com, we just want to pray, truly come to you, and pray for strength for Damar, for healing for Damar, for comfort for Damar. Be with his family. Give them peace. If we didn't believe that prayer didn't work, we wouldn't ask this of you, God. I believe in prayer. We believe in prayer. We lift up Damar Hamlin's name in your name. Amen. Why do people ask for thoughts and prayers after tragedies and unfortunate events? Because prayer matters. It always will. Prayer warriors, ESPN reported Thursday evening, the 24-year-old Hamlin is beginning to awaken as he shows substantial improvement in his recovery, according to doctors at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center on Thursday. Let's get one thing clear. The document provided to the Reporter-Telegram about the Midland County's $15.5 million purchase of the Parsley Building was not a development of an executive session discussion, but shared with Commissioner Scott Ramsey a week before the meeting. Whether the costs of renovations end up totaling $5 million or $12 million remains to be seen, but the idea that one member of the commissioner's court would falsely claim that another member was guilty of committing a crime on the radio is not what Midlanders should expect in their elected representatives. We hope that this type of governance, false accusations, isn't the norm over the next 2 years. This week, we learned of a terroristic threat arrest on a Midland ISD campus from late November. The district said that parents were notified. We hope that Midland ISD will begin taking a page from Ector County ISD, where Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard used to work, and start sharing arrests that happen on Midland ISD campuses. Behavior and discipline issues that result in arrests are news for the entire community, and releasing that information in a more timely manner is the type of transparency Midlanders expect.
Are there better PSA tests? Dear Dr. Roach, I am a male in his mid-60s who has used the PSA test for 20 years, with my score increasing as I age to 8.5 ng/mL. I have had several MRIs and biopsies, which all indicate benign prostatic hyperplasia, BPH, fortunately not cancerous lesions. As you are aware, the PSA test has been subject to numerous criticisms. I am suspicious of the PSA test due to the many hands that my blood sample has to travel through before it is analyzed at the lab, which might lead to receiving the wrong test results. As such, I also took OPKO's 4K score test, which indicated that I had a small chance of prostate cancer. Are you aware of any better test for prostate cancer and any lab that allows a patient to have blood taken and analyzed in the same facility to avoid mistakes? Dr. Roach answers, the PSA is indeed not a perfect test. Most men with elevated PSA levels will not have prostate cancer, which is why additional testing, such as the 4K score test and MRI scan, are appropriate for an expert to do in follow-up of an abnormal test. It is not an error in the laboratory, as lab errors are not at all common. It's a limitation of the PSA test itself. In order to find one case of curable prostate cancer, the kind that is destined to spread and threaten a man's life, many men will need screening. Most will have normal results, but many will need the additional testing you have received to be sure there is no cancer. New screening modalities are being developed.
This is the Dear Abby column. Anger issues become hurdle in romance and on the road. Dear Abby, I have a problem I just can't identify. I suppose it's a combination of a lot of issues. I live with my boyfriend and work from home. When it comes to patience about almost anything, I have the shortest fuse. Simple things trigger me, and I flare up quickly. If I see someone driving faster than me on the road, I resent it. Something on TV or even the wrong food will trigger me. My boyfriend takes the brunt of it. Other than my lack of patience and flying off the handle, everything is going relatively well. How can I get a grip and stop overdoing it when I get angry? Signed, Short Fuse in New Mexico. Dear Short Fuse, you need to deal with two separate issues. Your tendency toward competitive driving is dangerous to your health and others you encounter on the road. Our streets and highways are dangerous enough without motorists treating the privilege of driving as a competition. The purpose of driving is to arrive at one's destination safely rather than to compete with other commuters. When your stomach starts to tighten, ask yourself, could something other than road conditions be what's bothering me? Then give yourself a pat on the back for your insight and ease up on the accelerator. Although your boyfriend may have the patience of a saint, Unless you learn to control your impulses, you will drive him and others away. There, too, it's important to identify what may really be making you fly off the handle. The wrong food or something you saw on TV, while frustrating, are excuses, not necessarily the cause. I publish a booklet, The Anger in All of Us and How to Deal with It. It contains suggestions for managing and constructively channeling anger or frustration in various situations. It can be ordered by sending your name and address plus a check or money order for $8 in U.S. funds to Dear Abby, Anger Booklet, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price. It takes self-control to react maturely without exploding. If the suggestions in my booklet do not help you overcome your problem, consider discussing it with a licensed mental health professional. Becoming more in touch with your emotions will help you not only calm yourself without losing it, but also maintain the respect of others. Dear Abby, I am a sophomore in high school, and I recently got into a relationship. This isn't my first rodeo when it comes to this type of stuff, but in this instance, the guy I'm dating has never been in a relationship before. This is his first time. Because I've done this before, I know what to do in certain situations and understand social cues. How do I go about teaching him about certain aspects in a relationship? Like, how do I get him to make the first move and things like that? Signed, Wondering in California. Dear Wondering, be patient. Don't pressure him. Remember, everyone advances at their own rate. If what you want is a kiss, ask him for one. With a little help from you, I'm sure he will figure it out. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.